This is the July 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. You can find and listen to our program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. And on Sunday of this week, if you visit at Commodity Week on Twitter, you can just search my name out or at Commodity Week in Twitter. If you don't have an account, go to twitter.com and then look for at Commodity Week. And you can follow along as I make my way back from Fargo, North Dakota to Champaign, Illinois. And I'll run along through what I believe to be the highest producing drought-stricken area in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, through Worthington, Minnesota, down to Route 20 at Holstein, Iowa. And then I'll beeline back toward Champaign and run through places like Cedar Rapids and Waterloo and such. So follow along on Sunday if you can. Today on our Commodity Week program, we'll be joined by Ellen Dearden from Ag Review. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Chuck Shelby will be here from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Matt Bennett joins us from the farm in Windsor, Illinois and agmarket.net. First, Chuck, if you could tell me a little bit about conditions on the ground where you are there near Lafayette, Indiana.
Conditions have been pretty favorable, Todd. North of Lafayette, I've had some areas that have had continuous, maybe too much rain. But I would say in this part of Indiana, I'd say 95% of the crop is, really excellent in the corn side of the equation. On soybeans, though, still kind of suffering from whatever hurt them in the very beginning, maybe too much water. They just don't seem to be looking as good as their corn crop.
Matt, can you tell me about conditions in your area?
So, did we get too much rain potentially? Is that such a thing in July? Well, I think for corn, we're probably in really good shape. Most of pollination for us is pretty much complete. For soybeans, I think we've had too much rain. Now, are we still going to have awfully good beans if we have a good August? Certainly, I think we'll have really good beans, but, there's a lot of yellow beans showing up. So we've had more than enough rain, but crop conditions, I'll take them because it looks to me like there could be some really good corn yields, and I think very respectable bean yields are still possible as well.
Ellen Dearden, can you tell me how things are in Peoria, Illinois?
Well, I'm on the east side of the Illinois River, and we've had some big rains, but not huge rains. And we have very different conditions in our corn crop because we've got several different stages. We have corn that has pollinated already. We have corn that is chest high and ready to pollinate. And then we have corn that's waist high. So those corn crops look pretty darn different at this stage of the game. I'm a little bit concerned with the cloudy weather that we've had limiting good pollination conditions. Bean side of things, the beans are rather short. They are blooming. The rows are mostly filled in. There's an occasional field that's not. But I'd say the beans have looked better this week than they did last week, and that's after about a 2-inch rain at the outset of the week.
I'm in Fargo, North Dakota today and was with growers yesterday. They told me that I had an Eastern Corn Belt bias as to the size of this crop. What's your assessment, not of me, but of the size of the crop?
I don't want to tell them what my assessment of you is, Todd. No offense. I'm just kidding. So as far as the crop size goes, I told you this, I believe, yesterday. It's going to be so hard to handicap this crop because, on your farm there west of Champaign, my farm, south of you an hour, there's a lot of farms in our part of the world, west of us, east of us, that I think could pose some awfully salty corn yields, like, record type yields in places. Now, are there going to be holes here and there? Certainly. But what's the bias? The bias is that the Eastern Corn Belt and parts of Iowa are going to be phenomenal, whereas parts of the Northwestern Corn Belt, I heard you toss around a couple guys talking about 1988 type situations when we talked earlier in the week, and I've heard the same thing. So, how do you come up with an average national yield, especially when North Dakota picked up so many acres this year? And so right now, as I told you before, I feel pretty comfortable we're going to post a national record yield, which would be in that 177 range. Am I to 179.5 of the USDA quite yet? I don't know that I'm there yet. I think that I'm going to need to see really good conditions from here forward for most of the Corn Belt, maybe salvage some of this northwestern Corn Belt, you know, and then be able to hold on to the bushels in the east.
Well, Ohio looks to be very excellent. Indiana, for the most part, is one of the best crops ever. As you know, in Illinois, there's areas, central Illinois, Bloomington, continuously receiving too much rain. It looks like Illinois, outside of that area, is in very good shape. The farmers in Iowa we work with on the eastern side primarily are in very good shape. But I work with producers in the western states. They certainly are struggling and look to be a pretty bad situation, especially with the heat that's coming.
And what's your assessment of the current market?
Well, we've had a couple of three big weeks in a row, an up week, a big down week, and then now another up week. And we're running out of gas, it seems to me, on the corn side of things every time we get December corn. In that 550 to 565 area, we kind of flutter around. And so it'll be good to see if we can close above 560 on a weekly basis. We'll probably open the door for 570 or so. Really, your major resistance areas are that 611 high that we made the first of the month, and then also the contract high that we made in May, and that's up there at 638. It seems to me that we're still in a big, broad sideways market, and the market right now, I think, is trying to adjust. Are we going to suck some new fund buying into the corn and bean market? So far this week, we've seen some increases there, but not a whole lot. And the second thing is, there's some concern out here whether China will take the unshipped old crop bookings of corn, about 5 million metric tons, a little bit more than that, before the end of August in this marketing year. If not, that adds to our bottom line this year, and then the beginning stocks for next year. China says they're going to build a bunch of new storage and increase their storage by about 10 million metric tons. It'll be interesting to see whether that all gets filled up with corn or wheat. They say they want to encourage corn and wheat and rice at this stage of the game. Be interesting to see how that works out. We did see Ukraine weather kind of have a change here, turning a little more hot and dry. We've got dry conditions in South America, keeping Argentina's river system dry and a difficulty in moving corn to ports for export. And the other thing is we've got ocean freight that has jumped, continuing to move up. And really, it's up almost $1 a bushel out of the U.S. Gulf or out of the Pacific Northwest to China or to any of these Asian countries. Got another situation where the Pacific Northwest, particularly into Vancouver, difficulty with rail movement there because of the wildfires that have taken place. Then you throw on top of that frost worries for Sunday and Monday in Brazil again. Probably need to downside that crop. But I think the market's a little bit sitting on edge, wanting to move higher, but on kind of a wait-and-see mode, particularly in the corn. On the bean side of things, we really have had a pretty much a straight-up affair this week, and part of that is really on the canola crop in Canada, which is a wreck, and we've seen canola futures make some new highs this week, new contract highs this week at 949 Canadian dollars per metric ton. We're around 920 right now. So I think it will be interesting to see how this bean market shakes out, because certainly the meal is not on fire and bean oil is somewhat firmer today. And so we've got the November beans kind of locked in the sideways with just above $14 as resistance and just below 1380 as support. So we'll probably continue to to move higher. Now, the wheat market's the one that's really had a big upside reversal this week out of a 13-week cycle low and really has caught fire. Looks to me like the nearby wheat futures are poised to go back into that 710 area. We're around the 694 area right now. But wheat, again, if wheat's leading, that should be a good scenario for both corn and for beans in here now.
You gave me a trading range for soybeans. What's the range for corn?
The range for corn is probably, again, on the December futures. 550 should be a support area now. 535 to 525 is much more support. $5 is kind of give up support. And on the high side of things, we've got a lot of resistance between that 575, and then you get 611 the first of the month this month, and then that high that we made in the outset of May at 638.
You went through a litany of both friendly, bullish, and bearish fundamentals. You also mentioned that the funds needed to be in the marketplace. Did they exit at some point, and how do they come back in?
The funds have gotten out of long positions ever since the outset of April. And keep in mind, that's very countercyclical for them to not be long futures or adding to long futures for corn and beans in that time frame. So we've skinnied up, for instance, the corn long futures from the first of the year, around 400,000 contracts long for funds, to about half that right now. So we need to just see some, we need to see new money coming into this move. And to me, it's got to come on the speculative side from funds. Funds right now are just pretty much putting money into the equities market.
High prices are said to be the cure for high prices. Have we gotten there yet?
I don't know. If you believe USDA's numbers that they put out on Monday, shaving the average farm gate prices, I think they're saying that they think that we are seeing some demand. I don't know if you call it demand destruction, but demand softening at current prices. We sure haven't seen a lot of it. We haven't seen a lot of export business done this week. However, on the daily reporting system, China did buy some wheat today. But we've not seen much else.
What are you telling producers about where they should be in their marketing for corn and soybeans?
Well, I think it really depends on where you're located in the Corn Belt, because if I were in northwest Iowa, I sure would not be wanting to be cash sold at 60% like I would be in Indiana. I think you've got to be a lot more cautious. But I like some options in here. I like long December puts, and I've been buying the 540 puts and selling 640 calls against them to cheapen up the price, and also selling the 440 puts under the market. On the bean side of things, I think most people have said, well, I sold my beans the last 2 years off the combine, and that probably was not the right thing to do either time. And I'm not going to do that again. So I think most cash selling is probably locked in at 20 or 25% on the beans, and nobody wants to do anything more. So you've got to look at either buying options, which are terribly expensive to buy puts, or by selling the board in this $14 to $14.20 range.
Given what you know about the crop today, where do you think the corn crop will land when August comes around for the crop production report from USDA?
Well, I think personally that we're around 175, area 175 and a half. I think you have to consider that huge area from Minnesota and the Dakotas that's got some major problems. Illinois taking it out of the equation with taking the record yield off the crop. I'm landing kind of somewhere in that 175 area.
And for soybeans?
I think the soybean yield is probably somewhere under 50 bushel in the 49 area. The problem becomes for USDA, if they drop the yield down into the 49 sub 50, they're going to have to adjust demand, or that would imply we would have to ration price if we're that low on yield.
What do you make of this week's trade so far?
I think it's reacting pretty favorably. What we've seen is a market repel off some of those lows. starting to put some weather premium back into the market. Certainly, you've seen wheat become a leader, and the recognition of damage out in the West. So overall, pretty favorable. I think coming in next Sunday night and Monday, they'll be certainly looking ahead and see if that dry pattern continues and how far into August it goes.
And the rally in the wheat should be good for the corn market, I would think, because that lifts it out of the feed wheat area.
Yeah, it's a positive there. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. Also, you got canola crop in Canada that's going to help out soybeans. So we're going into the end of the growing season here with some tight scenarios all around in different segments of the grain world. So going forward, it certainly makes that August crop report extremely important. And the weather at the first few weeks of August, again, going to be a big determining factor how low the yields drop back.
Dealing with old crop, are end users still caught up through the time that new crop will come in, or are they going to have to go on the hunt again?
I think they're going to have to go on the hunt in the month of August. There's probably coverage into maybe the middle of August, but waiting for this new crop to come on, I think there's going to be some really, really strong bids. The interesting thing about the crop in the East is it might be a really fantastic crop, but as good at growing conditions that we got, how quickly will it mature with plenty of moisture around? We don't know the end of August yet, but I think there's going to be a really strong bid for late August and early September corn.
And potentially, I take it that you're thinking there will also be some really strong quick ship bids?
No, absolutely. They're going to pay a lot, I think, to get guys to go out and harvest some of that corn early. Yeah, it's going to be a great crop in the East. But again, on the other hand, the need to get some September corn in, they're going to have it. The demand's going to be there. And some guys are going to get some good premium, I think, early on.
What are you thinking producers should keep in the back of their mind as it's related to marketing? And by this, I'm thinking many have pushed marketing along pretty far. Do they need to be really patient at this point? Or is this a time when you might want to market early with the quick ships and then even maybe into the early harvest season?
I think you have to divide it up into the Eastern Corn Belt and the West. If you're in the East here, we're in a pretty unique situation. We have a great opportunity with a really probably good crop coming. We like selling some of the bushels ahead of time here in the cash market. And then if you have the ability to harvest some early bushels, take advantage of the quick ship. Going forward then beyond that, if you have bins, might not be a bad situation to hold on to some of that crop. We saw the demand came in last year really strong. So I think you have to divide the market up into different components of how you're going to market your crop going into 22.
I'm wondering on the world marketplace, after the soybean crop in South America, particularly from Brazil, came on board, it took a while for everybody to begin thinking about a two-crop world as it related to soybeans and a potential for a rally in the winter months here in the United States based on weather issues in South America. It's somewhat the same for corn. However, that crop is so far delayed, meaning it's the second crop and they're in the middle of harvest now. Have you got a handle on what that means to marketing plans for farmers in the United States?
As we go through the, you know, the last few years, the demand has been there. We've had some issues on the Brazilian second crop. So I think for producers, it's been a positive. It just makes it a little more challenging, I guess, after last year we saw such a run-up going into winter with demand, that it's a positive. Until we grow another huge crop of corn in some part of the world, to me, the corn market's going to stay firm and well-supported.
How do basis levels differ as we head into harvest for the Western Corn Belt and the Eastern Corn Belt, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no doubt that the pipeline is kind of empty. I mean, you know, and so when you start talking to some of your processors and merchandisers about, wow, this Eastern Corn Belt, the basis is going to fall apart, you know, they get a little uneasy with that conversation, say, you know, I don't think that's going to happen right away because we've got quite a bit, you know, stores to fill before we get into that situation. But as a general rule, there's no question Western Corn Belt bases could be literally on fire, especially when you get into the upper northwestern areas, because I just don't think there's going to be enough to go around. So they're going to have to be able to draw corn into those areas. We all know there's been a lot of cattle sales, unfortunately, in North Dakota. You sure hate to hear about that, but there's still a lot of cattle in North and South Dakota. They got to have something to eat. We know there's a lot more ethanol plants whenever we get into Iowa, Nebraska, and the Dakotas than what we see in our part of the world. So there's no doubt it's a high usage area. They're going to have to do everything in their power to pull those bushels in, which is going to show basis, relatively speaking, is going to be way better in the West than what they typically see. Whereas in the East, it's probably going to be status quo as we get farther into harvest. At first, it might be pretty good yet, though.
How does the high price of corn, higher price of corn, affect demand, if at all, at this point?
Well, you know, one thing that we saw is whenever the price of corn got really high, we still saw really good corn usage for ethanol numbers, and we're still seeing those numbers. Of course, we've backed off on the market a little bit as far as cash is concerned, but one thing we did see a fair amount of is some switching over from corn to wheat. So we fed a lot of wheat. I do expect that that's going to show up somewhat whenever we get the September 30th report as far as your ending stocks go. I don't think it's going to be anything substantial, but there's no question that when you run the price of corn up, you're typically going to see demand back off some. Did we see that to the tune that the trade thought it was going to happen this year? I don't believe that we did. And so our current price levels, I think we're still posting good ethanol margins. You know, cattle numbers, yes, they've backed off some, but they're still pretty decent. And I got to think that this export situation with China building more storage, I think they're building the storage to fill it. So I do think that they're going to actually be in this export market pretty heavily. And I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. So I think demand's going to stay pretty strong, even at these high price levels.
It appears that producers, at least for corn, have been pretty good at marketing the crop up front. Do they need to stand aside at this point?
That's the big question, Todd. I don't know how many folks have asked me in the last few days, do I use my storage this year? You know, do I just sell across the scale? I can book incredible profits. And I think there's going to be a large amount of people that are going to market a pretty significant amount of corn across the scale. With that being said, if you're someone who does put it in the bin, then you might get the opportunity later on, whether it be through a rally in the market due to the fact so much corn moved to harvest, or from a basis standpoint, I think that you could see some excitement later on, at least relatively speaking. So, you know, the tough thing is the biggest question for me is what's going to happen whenever we get out past harvest. We know Brazil's probably going to come to us with more acreage. There's no question that they're going to reward these high prices with big production. But from the producer standpoint, you know, I don't think they can go wrong by selling a lot of harvest time, but I also think that they could get rewarded by holding on to some of it. I don't know if I answered your question, but I think it's one of those things where we've got a whole lot of good alternatives to consider here in 2021.
Well, let me give you a different scenario. If you are faced with a bin that you could fill with soybeans or corn, which would you do?
I'd probably fill it with corn if it were me. First of all, you know, just from a logistic standpoint, people enjoy storing corn more so than
any
soybeans.
Final word from you,
know,
you for the day, Matt
don't
Bennett?
Like storing beans, and a lot of times when you put 13% in the beans in the bin, they come out at 11. It's not the end of the world. They'll keep. We know they will. But as far as corn's concerned, I don't think that Brazil is going to ramp up corn production maybe as much as what they're going to ramp up soybean production, at least from what we're hearing. So, you know, if I was going to put corn in the bin and think that later on we could see something exciting happen, I would probably look towards corn. And for a variety of reasons I've already listed, but the last one's going to be that, you know, we really need to ensure big corn acreage in 2022. And I think that's going to keep the market with an underpinning. And I do think that there could be some opportunities on farther out. I know, again, that there'll be a lot of folks marketing through the harvest. So if you're one of them that doesn't, you might be the one that really gets rewarded later on.
Which has greater potential for the upside, do you suppose, corn or soybeans at this time?
That's a loaded question, of course, because, you know, the way that the two markets move, You know, I guess safe storage wise, I like corn, but I would tell you, Todd, that beans probably have more potential for upside right now. And here's why. I feel like this crop is not as good relative to what we're talking about with corn. Corn crop being made where it's good, I can kind of buy that due to where we're at in the calendar year and how much moisture we have throughout the vast majority of the Corn Belt. But as far as soybeans are concerned, where we've had the rain, I think we've had too much rain in a lot of places. I mean, I had another 3.5 inches of rain last night and didn't necessarily need it by any stretch of the imagination. Starting to see a lot of yellow beans. And so I've got to think that this bean crop, you might hustle it, you know, to get it much over 50. Right now the USDA is at 50.8. You know, what if you start talking about a sub 50 yield given our razor thin margins? So it's hard to get bullish at $14 beans. I struggle with that because of the functionality of it, but I'm not so sure that this bean market's done rallying yet.
Let's get one livestock question in. The hog market's been fairly active. Ellen Dearden, you've been paying attention to that, I take it.
Yeah, it's been pretty jumpy, and part of that has come about because second quarter hog pork production in China was revealed to be up 36% year over year. And they have not been a buyer. Actually, we saw the lowest exports of pork on a weekly basis. This pet reported on Thursday, and that's kind of an upsetting thing to see. The July hogs went off the board this week. We've got August hogs at a discount to July's, and this market trying to play catch up on the nearby months, but the back months just can't do anything at a big discount.
And a final word from you, Ellen Dearden.
Meal market has had two inside trading days in a row. That means that Monday's market action will be very important to see how it shakes out.
Any final word from you for the day, Matt Bennett?
I think you just got to keep it simple sometimes. And if you sell corn at $5.50 and it goes up another dollar, you still made a lot of money. Keep things in perspective and don't beat yourself up because, you know what, if you make money and make more money this year than you have in several years, you're liable to leave some on the table. So I don't want to try to get too cute. And again, I just want to market for profit.
And your final word for the day, Chuck Shelby.
I appreciate the opportunities here in the Eastern Corn Belt. A very unique situation to have a pretty darn good crop coming along. An opportunity for producers here in the East to make some really good money, take advantage of it, yet maintain some flexibility.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program in its entirety anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Ellen Dearden, Chuck Shelby, and Matt Bennett. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Mild temperatures persisted this past week. 7-day average temperatures range from the high 60s in northern Illinois to the high 70s in southern Illinois, between 2 and 6 degrees below normal. July so far has been between 1 and 4 degrees cooler than normal statewide, quite a contrast compared to the warm start to the summer season. In fact, last month was the warmest June on record for the contiguous United States and the 36th warmest on record in Illinois. Rainfall continued this past week across the state. 7-day totals range from less than an inch in northeast Illinois to over 5 inches in parts of south central Illinois. Following a very dry spring and start to summer, rainfall since mid-June has been above normal statewide, including between 6 and 10 inches above normal in parts of western and east central Illinois. Rain this week was very welcome in northwest Illinois, which has seen expansion of drought conditions in recent weeks. Moderate to extreme drought persisted across northern Illinois in this week's U.S. Drought Monitor, although conditions in both northwest and northeast Illinois have marginally improved since the start of the month. Although soil moisture in northern Illinois is still in deficit, recent rains have bought times for crops in that area that were showing significant stress. Looking ahead, forecasts are calling for a continuation of cooler weather through this weekend. Southern Illinois is expected to pick up another 1 to 1.5 inches over the next 7 days, with far lower totals in northern and central Illinois. Longer-term outlooks are indicating a potential pattern shift to warmer and drier weather. The Climate Prediction Center outlooks show elevated odds of warmer and drier than normal conditions for the last week of July and possibly into August. A warm and dry end of July will be welcome in central and southern Illinois, where soil moisture is adequate to surplus and beans are noticeably wishing for a break from the rain. The warmer and drier conditions, though, would be less welcome in parts of northern Illinois with existing soil moisture deficit. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.